fantastic voyage.
Ray said, shoot a nigga in the finger, though.
Come on with it. Get up. Get on up. Get on the seat now. Like a sex machine. Get on up. That's right. Sometimes you got to do a little force, a little power.
I didn't realize he was recording.
We sure is. Y'all, we had to send You Don't Know Harriet to our beloved cousin who inspired the episode.
And my ninja is under the weather right now.
He's a little, just a little sick.
A little sick. Hoo-ha! Hoo-ha! Hoo!
So we told him, we said, yo, we got something that'll cheer you up a little bit. Because he sent us another video of someone talking about Harriet Tubman. I said, oh, this is right on Brandon. You know, as many jokes as we do make about surviving white supremacy, it's always important to be honest about, we laugh through our pain, you know. Mm-hmm. And even though we laugh through our pain, ain't shit funny.
No.
The reality is, people love to be like, we are not our ancestors, as if our ancestors are weak. And we could never set foot in their shoes to survive the way that they did. Mm-hmm. In an anti-black world.
Right.
Where black folks were capital. Where we were money.
Yes.
You know? And so, the lessons that we learn from them, the breadcrumbs that they have left us, helps to inform how we move forward through the movement work that continues to exist here. Because contrary to popular belief, black people still ain't free. Okay? Every which way we fight for our dignity. Every which way we still on bended knee. Standing on them bottles. You know them bottles on life?
Damn toe got stuck in the bottle.
It got stuck in the bottle. We stuck in the bottle. And we just have to be honest about that. But listen, I have a master's in Africana studies. I work in policy. I'ma pop my shit. I'ma read my shit. I'ma continue to read my shit. I'ma connect point A to point B to point C to point D. And I'ma still kiki. Now, with that being said, are you ready?
Yeah.
Today, we are going to have a conversation about being black and being exceptional. What I shared that the title was just going to be, I told you that upstairs. It left me. It was a good thing.
That's what you said.
No, I didn't. I said being black, being something, and being exceptional. Maybe it was super exceptional.
Yeah, I'll take it too.
Shit, I'll take it too. Now, this comes at a time where we finished watching the Grammys. Mm-hmm. The Grammys was great. Mm-hmm. And a lot of us were anticipating to see Album of the Year go to Beyonce. Mm-hmm. Mary J. Blige was also honored in that same category. Mm-hmm. And Album of the Year went to Harry Styles, who during his speech said that people like me don't get these opportunities chosen often, something to that degree, which we know to be false, because people like us have to be overly exceptional. And even when we are, we still are told, not now. Never too much, never too much. Like, oh, you know, hold on, wait a minute. You know? Mm-hmm. We're told that we're not able to get access to the things that we rightfully deserve, even when
you change culture.
When we earned it, when we changed culture, when we are revolutionary. Well, there's just so many different things to describe this. And as I was listening to King of Reeds earlier today, he said something really important, which was, if Beyonce could be a person who is so on point. As a Black American woman.
Yes.
Let's call a spade and still not be awarded for something she well deserves. Imagine what it's like for people like us who don't have that level of fame. And we have to show up to be overly exceptional. Mm-hmm. Y'all get what I said. I just want to make sure I pronounce it right. I'm not trying to put politics myself. You know, as a person who went through speech growing up in school, sometimes dealing with a stutter, sometimes, you know,
mispronunciation. I get it.
And, you know, I'd be going through some challenges.
Same here.
But he was basically saying that that struggle is universal. Mm-hmm. And today we're going to talk about it. Our experiences, shit that we've seen with other people, you know, really breaking down whiteness and how it shows up in the music industry. Okay. And most importantly, how it's important that we honor ourselves, even when we are so undervalued. With that being said, I'd like to welcome you all to another episode of the Broke Black Bougie Podcast, where we create candid conversations for young Black women. And it's relatable because we've all been there. Women having to make it on less than our worth. We do it while setting trends, spreading Black assness, and ultimately busting our tails to live our best life. You ready to tap into the politicking segment? All right now. To be young, to be gifted, to be Black. Sometimes the Black don't be tap, 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 but they want to tap, tap, tap on that Because we was once assets. Never. Toya, why are you looking at me like that? I'm about to go into my Proud Family shit.
I didn't know you were about to come in like that.
I was about to, because I felt you was about to come in.
Yeah.
I was going to go, because we was once assets. Never forget the ass regrets. That didn't come out right.
I get what you were saying. I was
trying to set the tone. No. You know, I shigas. You know? With Katana bring out that motherfucking fan on your ass. That's what it was.
I thought you were doing the other game.
Oh, that's the other game?
Yeah.
What's the other game called?
I forgot. But
Nintendo 64.
Right. It's that other game.
It's the face game.
It's the other game.
It's either face. It start with something with the executioner.
Yeah.
No, I shigas.
I
don't know. She said some shit. She had that yield. For those of y'all who might be confused on what we talking about, because this is really dated, okay? Back in the day when I was young, not a kid anymore, but some days I sit and wish I was a kid again. There was a game on Nintendo 64 that was very similar to Mortal Kombat. Mm-hmm. They had different stories. You would play it, and the whole premise of the game was to just end somebody else. You know, it's a fighting game.
Yeah.
And one of the characters, the sound was, Aishigas, or something like that. I don't know what the hell she was saying. But every time she blew out that fire,
like you said, everybody had a story, though.
Everybody had a story, that's right. And then, you know, I couldn't play the game anymore because it got so dark to me. It just would be, the music that would be playing and shit would stress me out.
And then that one dude with the skeleton, his arm would always fall off.
Yeah. He would be laughing, right? Oh, no, it's okay. You used to love playing with him, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's all right. We don't got to go down there because you bringing up old shit.
Yeah. Just
scary shit. Yeah. That's why I stopped playing that damn dungeon game anyway.
The music is scary, too.
It is. That's what I say. It got too... Toya, I don't need you to bring the music up. I said, all right. Let's move. Like Harriet said, let's move.
Okay. Fair enough.
Your fingers are showing.
Now, back to what you were... Oh, my goodness. Back to what you were saying now.
Yes. To be young, gifted, and Black. We understand what the narrative of being an achiever, an overachiever, someone who is up to par, someone who is worthy, someone who is working hard, right? We understand where those narratives come from because we come from a community where all of the opposite of that was placed on us. Being lazy, not worthy, tiresome all the time. But you know, let me tell you something, I'm sick and tired. She's being sick and tired of being sick and tired. I'm going to continue to be motherfucking sick and tired. That ain't never going to change. But when we describe what it means to be Black and exceptional, it's not lost on us that that is something we had to be conditioned to. given our circumstances in society and the common narratives that we hear that, you know, you gotta work twice as hard to get what you want. And the goalposts for Black people are steady moving. You know, you work twice as hard to reach that achievement. By the time you reach that achievement, the goalpost is already gone. You know, it's steady moves consistent. It's steady is moving consistently. So I wanted to set the tone to ask us to define what does being Black and exceptional mean to us.
It means power. It means...
Got a lot of power.
No. Don't do that. Get out.
Why I gotta get out?
Because
I didn't say nothing.
Yes, you did.
I just said got a lot of power.
Yeah. Yeah.
You,
I can't with you. No, but I'm just saying that, you know, it just means, it means power, it means strength, determination. You know, you think about everything that, like you said, for us to be the, we have to be over exceptional for the things that we do. I don't care what realm you are in. You have to be over exceptional.
Garbage cleaner, spotless.
Spotless. That means ain't no dust falling on the dog on the dog on sidewalk. Anything. You the garbage man, all the garbage cans are lining the road evenly down the street.
Ain't no such thing as trash man didn't get my trash today.
Exactly. I just realized what you just did just now. You're on my nerves.
References.
But yeah, it's just the fact that we have to be over exceptional. It's exhausting.
Mm-hmm.
Because we have to prove ourselves 10 times as much.
Mm-hmm.
And for who?
The white man.
I can't with your facial expressions right now.
I was trying not
but,
to.
But it's just, it comes to a point where we can't be subpar.
Yeah.
And yet, you know, our counterparts, we've seen that in different dynamics where people are just getting by to get by. We can't get by just to get by.
Harry.
We have to be more than the exception mm-hmm. when it comes to anything that we do in life.
Mm-hmm.
And like for anything that we've experienced, it is tiresome. That term burnout, before we even knew what it meant, our people were already burned out.
Tell it.
So that's no new term. You know what I'm saying? It was something different that we probably have said during those times. But now we say the phrase burnout. No, our people have already, we passed the burnout phase.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? I think a lot of us right now are truly running on...
Melting. That's what it is. If we're past burnt out, we're melting.
Yeah.
Melting.
Yes, yeah. At that moment. You're running on fumes right now. But yeah, still giving you the best that I got. More than that. More than that. So, it's so difficult to wrap my head around that.
Yeah.
In a way that is like, yo, like, damn, like, everything that's up against us.
Mm-hmm.
And yet we're constantly pushing back. We're constantly pushing back. And rightfully so. But you get tired. You just get tired. What are your thoughts about being...
I agree 1,000%. I do. I think for me, I define it as existing.
Yeah.
Being Black and existing. Regardless of what industry you work in, your level of education, your level of access, mm-hmm. your finances, mm-hmm. being Black and existing is enough. And it's hard when these narratives are conditioned, like we're conditioned by these narratives, but when other people in our community define being Black and exceptional in alignment with credentialism.
Yeah.
in alignment with capitalism, in alignment with things that have never really aided in our liberation. But maneuvering within those systems, we have been able to, in some way, shape, or form, get by, but definitely not get by Blackness. Mm-hmm. So being Black and existing is enough. And for me, all of the other things, the accolades, the what you do, you know, your talents, all of that stuff, it's just, it's a plus, because to be people like us, to survive what we survive, to be trendsetters in the world, Craig, trendsetters in the world, you know, to take something out of nothing, to, especially for you know, Black Americans in our history with having Southern Black folks, you know, in our family, to see what they've built, to see what they've been able to create out of being stolen, out of being robbed, out of being exploited. It's a lot. And when we apply that to the global system of white supremacy and the challenges that, you know, our cousins and them experienced in other lands, in the Caribbean, you know what I'm saying? Like, being Black, like, just...
It's hard, right?
It is hard, but being Black and existing, no matter where you are, is enough. But to some people, they don't believe that. And I would ask them to dig deeper into their anti-Black narratives.
It's so, you know, you hear so many stories about things that, you know, like you said, the accolades, the achievements that our people have done, mm-hmm. you know, the things that we've created, you know, so much that is poured into what everybody else is benefiting from.
They consume, yeah.
And you act as if our rich heritage, our rich history it shouldn't be discussed. I'm really sitting here, like, thinking, more so being angry because of having to, I don't want to say necessarily justify it, but it's like, yo, like you said, I should be able just to exist being who I am. Mm-hmm. And that's that. Mm-hmm. Like, all the other shit, like you said, the accolades, the degrees, whatever else I may have attached to me, those are pluses. I'm a human being that just so happened to be Black.
I eat, breathe, and sleep Black. I spray Black.
I smell black.
I smell Black. I'm all that. Period. The middle name of this entire platform is Black. That is intentional. Mm-hmm. Very intentional.
Yes.
But, yeah,
it's hard to describe, you know, the feeling that we have, because we know that we are so much more than what others may see us as, you know? Mm-hmm. And I shouldn't have to justify my worthiness in ways of being over exceptional to those looking from the outside in.
Absolutely. Absolutely not. But it's also the standards that we ourselves sometimes hold with each other that's challenging too.
That's true.
You know, it's like the conversations when people talk about level of education. I've heard people literally demean folks who just have a associates, who don't have an education. You know, folks like our grandfather who dropped out of school, you know, and still was able to raise a family of 8 people. That's a lot.
Yeah.
And that's not including himself.
No.
You know, and so you think about those dynamics and how it's harmful, but the harm that shows up in the spaces of when we critique each other and it's so violent and it sounds like white rhetoric, you know, like that shit comes from the tentacles of white supremacy. And I will always call it the tentacles. I think of it like an octopus in so many different damn legs. Ugh, kill the visual. Tentacles. So many damn tentacles. That have the ability to just swoop you in. You know, it's a very hard thing. And pivoting this conversation to the Grammys, I was not someone who wanted to watch the Grammys. Like, yeah, I'm gonna watch the motherfucking Grammys.
I didn't want to watch it until you was like, something you saw on I think it was Instagram.
Yep.
And I was like, let's tune in. You said you couldn't get it. I said, let's tune in.
It was the outfits that I was seeing.
Yeah.
I was seeing the outfits, and then I wanted to see what the actual show was going to be like. And knowing that Beyonce once again was nominated for Album of the Year, I was like, let me tap in to see if it would be different. There was a mustard seed of hope for me. Mm-hmm. Simply because for so long, it's kind of been non-existent. You know, 11 people, black bodies, have won a Grammy for the Album of the Year. One person has won that 3 times. There's only been 13 collective wins of a black person getting that award. Stevie Wonder won it 3 times. So while we were struggling to post it on IG, I was like, nah, I gotta make sure everything was right. Mm-hmm. You know, make sure it was accurate, make sure it was realistic, it was official. And black women, only three times have won that award. The last black woman being Lauryn Hill in 99. So when I think about the type of collection of music that has existed beyond 99 in the 2000s,
right,
you can't tell me that there is not one black person who has made a fucking masterpiece. From my favorite black artist,
right,
you gotta be out of your mother effing mind.
Right.
And so to see Beyonce every time
get nominated
in that category and lose, it's like, this is a black exceptionism. Did I say it right? I think I didn't say it right. A black exceptionalism problem.
You know what I thought about when you said that?
Yeah.
And this is just my opinion on what I thought about the Grammy situation. There was a lot of things that you and I were both like,
okay, no, really? Right.
So, yes, she is the most
decorated
artist to receive Grammy wins.
Period.
And I felt like, okay, at that moment when we saw her get that award and she stood up there and she thanked God and, you know, she went down her whole list of things and discussing, you know, everything about the moment itself.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like, to me, in my opinion, okay, we gave her what she wanted.
Mm-hmm.
But now we're going to make sure that
she get what she deserves.
She get what she deserves.
Mm-hmm.
And we both sat here. I'm like, yo, it better be Beyonce. I was waiting for them to be like, Beyonce. You know, and yet, when that didn't happen, I was like, okay.
A white person.
I'm like, okay, so how often are we going to see her being, like you said, in this category, knowing the body of work she has created? She doesn't just put any old thing out there. She creates with intent.
Yeah. Because she has the power to do that
she
now.
She creates with meaning. Mm-hmm. The way she moves, it is not like any other artist.
and that's not to discredit any other artist. Mm-mm. Everybody's creativity is different. But she gives me the realms of how Michael Jackson would do things, how Prince would do things, mm-hmm. as their, you know, as an artist and their artistry. So when you see the body of work, how people across the globe was singing Cuff It.
Unique.
So I came with you. So with her being like, you got this, but we gonna give this to somebody else.
It hurts. It fucking hurts. And I agree with you 1,000%. Like, growing up, being someone who loves to sing, anytime I was in a fake girl group,
you was Beyonce.
Girls was fighting for Beyonce. It would get to the point where we'd be like, all right, you could be Beyonce this song, the next song, I'm going to rotate it. And then, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like, all right, you know, we're going to get this shit together. Mm-hmm. Because she had our favorite parts. Mm-hmm. She had the voice, the look, the aesthetic. You know what I'm saying? And sure, we can go into conversations about colorism, about Michelle and Kelly and being dark-skinned and being in the industry. All of that is very valid. Mm-hmm. Multiple truths can exist at the same time, okay? But there was always something about Beyonce that showed eventually she would break out of having solo work. Having group work and transitioning into solo. A lot of people forget this. At the time when Destiny's Child separated, Beyonce originally was not the most successful solo artist of the group. It was actually Kelly. Because she had got that feature with
Nelly.
If I believe,
there was other features. I can't think.
There was like other features before that, but Beyonce, the lens was always on her. I'm not going to say it wasn't, but at the time it was deemed that Kelly was the most active or, you know, present in terms of her solo career.
But I think too, that had a lot to do with industry trying to pin people.
Women. Absolutely.
You know, knowing that they were so close in friendship and sisterhood.
Yep.
Trying to pin them against each other. You know what I'm saying? That shit's whack.
It's super whack. But when Beyonce surfaced, people was like, this is exactly what we wanted to see. This is exactly what we were seeing. Mm-hmm. And every step of the way from each of her albums, the evolution of it,
yes,
is quite insane, because as she broke out and became more into, you know, grew more into her womanhood, she's been in the industry since she was a kid.
Yeah.
Her agency over her craft is very different.
Yes.
And a lot of people don't have that agency over their craft, but it took her time to show up in that way.
Yeah.
I remember earlier Beyonce, who used to be very shady in interviews. I remember early Beyonce, who was young. We all have a young side of us that we've grown out of. Mm-hmm. I remember seeing tension with members of Destiny's Child. Some of those things that still surface today when people talk about and reflect on her career, the way that they talk about Beyonce's artistry is the way that they talk about MJ, the way that they talk about a Prince, the way that they talk about a Aretha, the way that they talk about an Anita, okay? The way that they talk about a Mariah, the way that they talk, do I have to keep going on and on and on?
No, you don't.
How they talk about a Diana. She's already cemented as an idol. But what gets me is this. People can say what they want. Beyonce is at a level of Michael Jackson.
Most definitely. Most definitely.
Most definitely.
Yes.
You cannot tell me Beyonce right now, say she doing a concert. Let me paint a picture for y'all who wasn't searching for tickets. Originally, I said I wasn't going to go. I wasn't feeling it. You know what I'm saying? Because I need to prioritize my financial wellness goals. And if I ever want to get to my level of being exceptional, sometimes you got to make boring choices. Mm-hmm. But there are folks who got on social media and said, listen, I don't know how I'm going to pay rent. I don't know how I'm going to eat food. I don't even know what excuse I got. But I'm going to Beyonce shit. People rather drink water for a week than miss out on Beyonce's concert. It is so tough to get a ticket for Beyonce. They got motherfuckers in groups. That's how you know the type of superstardom that Beyonce has. Yeah. I'm talking about groups by city and motherfucking country. And just because you sign up to get registered don't mean they're going to hit your ass with a code. I'm talking like that. So it's to the point where people are part of the community like, this might be the last Beyonce concert.
And that's what everybody is feeling. I think everybody feels that way.
Like, she got a family now.
Yeah.
She dropped what she considers to be her most creative project of freedom made during a time during the pandemic. Mm-hmm. The last time she went on tour was about more than a week ago. Mm-hmm. This may be it. And people want to capture this moment.
This is like when you had Lord, rest in peace, mm-hmm. Michael Jackson with the This Is It tour, and people knew this was his final hurrah.
Yep.
And people wanted to see him.
Yep.
In his final concert moment, mm-hmm. you know. So I think we're all feeling that right yep. now. Like, yep. yo, this may be her last concert.
She's not a person who announces.
No, she's not one that does that.
You know, she don't have to.
No.
She don't have to. Everybody can't do Beyonce marketing.
No.
You don't got a brand. You think you could drop something last minute and make it work? She could be silent for 4 years. Mm-hmm. And on day one of year five, drop something. Folks are flocking to it.
Yes.
That's a legacy that was built since she was in her teens. Mm-hmm. Not everybody got it like that.
No. And just to see, like you said, the evolution of her.
Absolutely.
The evolution from her teens.
Absolutely.
To her mid-20s, to her 30s, to now where she's at right now. It's like, yo, like, everything that she has done, she's earned that.
Absolutely. I will say that. Absolutely.
And I think about it like, yo, like, I know with the artistry and everything. Mm-hmm. And I'm going back to this Grammy thing with her having album of the year.
It don't make sense.
It would have been the icing on a cake.
But you know what they tell us? Never too much, never too much.
So I'm just like, you think about these things with her being who she is, knowing how much she has shifted. I mean, it just... Just her masterpiece of work, and to not get that Grammy for Best Album of the Year.
If she would have got it, it could be like, you could rest now.
Yeah.
But you know what? The thing about Beyonce, she ain't even gonna rest. The thing is, deep down, she knows she deserved that. She knows that. But that's the reality of being black in an industry that
just goes to show has
always performed black erasure.
Yeah.
Always.
And then we...
Always.
And then we go to the celebration of 50 years of hip hop. Mm-hmm. You know, I enjoyed the segment. I did. Some people felt differently about some things. I know that you felt a way about it. And I'm like, you make a valid point. You make a valid point. I want you to discuss what you said about
the... I don't remember. We're going to get to tweets. I just want y'all to know, we're going to talk our shit, and then we're going to get to tweets, what other people said, and then, you know, bounce off of that. But
you were discussing about what took place in 89. Oh. The year that I was born. You was like... Let's not forget what the Grammys have done to hip hop. Mm-hmm. You mentioned about erasure mm-hmm. in 89. I want you to kind of dig into that. What your thought process was when you saw the Grammys the other night.
And watching the Grammys segment to salute hip hop upon hip hop turning 50, I thought it was a beautiful segment. Mm-hmm. We were in here kikiing.
What?
Bar for bar.
Bar for bar.
You know, from Queen Latifah to Ghetto Boys to, my God, everybody. And you can tell everybody. You know, we was really kind of like mesmerized, like just in time, you know? Broken glass everywhere. People pissing on the stage. No, they just don't care. You know, like a jungle sometimes. It makes me wonder how I keep from going under. Okay. From social political hip hop to the commercialization of hip hop to present day hip hop, like it's intergenerational, mm-hmm. you know? And so, as somebody, when I say I'm a lover of hip hop's heritage, I'm talking Negro spirituals, I'm talking jazz, I'm talking soul, mm-hmm. I'm talking funk. Okay, I'm talking that is what it is. Mm-hmm. Because hip-hop, the two genres that came before it was soul and funk music. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of the old heads in the industry, a lot of the producers that I love who know music, when you hear certain samples that they use, the cuts that they use, the live instrumentation that they use, yes. a lot of that is a call and response to the music and the genres of our past. That's why it's not weird for me to see when Snoop Dogg, you know, I know you were with some old girl, so come on. You want tracks like Let that. Me,
yes.
You know what I'm saying? Yes. Beautiful. Yes. Oh. You know what I'm saying? Yes. I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised to see him on IG rolling up a blunt, smoking that shit to some, you dropped a bomb on me, no, baby.
None of the above.
Surprised with any of that.
None of the above.
Because that's the shit that they grew up on listening to.
Yes.
And music is a vibration. And that vibration stays alive by you pulling on past vibrations and creating future vibrations through those that energy. That's how I look at hip hop. Mm-hmm. So when I say I'm a lover of hip hop heritage, I mean that shit. Mm-hmm. So in me watching this, I said it's a full circle moment. Because in 1989, that was when the first rap... The first rap mm-hmm. Grammy
yep.
was given mm-hmm. out to a rap artist. Mm-hmm. At that time, they didn't call it hip-hop. They just called it rap. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't televised. Folks in the industry knew that the award wasn't going to be televised. There was a problem with that amongst all hip-hop artists. Mm-hmm. So they boycotted it. Had their own celebration, didn't show up. Some of the things that artists said was, we don't demean country music. You know, we're not saying that this music isn't important. And they got about 9 categories. You only giving us 1? Today, hip hop is one of the most profitable genres in the world, Craig.
In the world. Not just a city, but the world.
But the world. And something that was created out of black struggle. And I want people to understand this. Because people are like, oh, no, that's not... It's facts. The Bronx was burning. Hip-hop was created out of a socio-political movement of young black people. Who used hip-hop as a way to express themselves, mm-hmm. but also as a way to heal.
Yeah. You think about Negro, like you said, Negro spirituals.
Hymns, Negro, yes.
The things that our people did back then to heal themselves, mm-hmm. to sing their way out of the situation they were in.
Mm-hmm.
You get what I'm saying?
To free themselves.
To free themselves.
To send messages to yes. each other.
Yes.
Those same vibrations exist through hip hop.
Yes.
So, it was a full circle moment. I was like, but let's not forget that the Grammys has always been anti-black. Y'all just looked at rap as like, oh, it's a trend. No, baby. Nothing that black people create is a trend.
You guys make it, try to see, like, it's a trend. No. It's a reality.
If it goes out in a cycle, it'll come right back. Let me tell you something. In the 70s, motherfuckers was wearing bell bottoms left and right. There was a period where if you wasn't wearing skinny legs, you wasn't in. As of 20 motherfucking 23, I got about 3 pairs of bell bottoms. I'm talking about wide leg, big ass shorts.
I do too now.
Can you feel it? Can you feel it?
Or let me show you. Let me show you the way.
Okay, period. Girl, let me tell you something. Is you rolling? I might be. You the shit. You the sugar, honey, iced tea. Who that sample? You know the original. There are certain songs.
Yes. That you know off the bat.
Where if anybody samples it, I'd be like, oh, yes. Like Juicy. Mm-hmm. I actually, Candy Rain. That motherfucker said, coming down. I'll be a lollipop.
You can lick me anywhere. Juicy.
I fucked up the lyric. She wasn't playing. When she said, I like it. That motherfucker said, I love it. I'm not playing. GQ, I love you so right now, mama, baby. Hey, yeah. Little darling, I said, never. That's why I'm a fucking jukebox. Girl, I don't play no game.
It's amazing because when you look at, like you said, how when you see Snoop,
uh-huh.
He listened to the music that he grew up on. And yet when we look at the music of how, you know, our parents giving us the infusion of mm-hmm. New Jack Swing and mm-hmm. giving us the Gap Band, GQ, Heatwave, all these artists that they listen to, and yet mm-hmm. we now love that music.
Uh-huh.
And people be like, how y'all know this? Because it's our parents.
It's our parents.
But not only that, it's yeah. just, we just, like you said, it's vibration. It's in you. It's a feeling that, yo,
it ain't
like,
on you. It's in
when
you.
I hear Outstanding, the extended version.
Period. I don't play no games. Let me tell y'all something. We so nice with it. When we go to concerts, it always happens. It's always that one. What y'all know about that? Let me tell you something. I went to see Cameo in concert. Oh, they was on my list. We was there. It wasn't cold that night. It was you, me, and Dr. Bell.
Yes.
Okay? When I tell you we were jamming, saw George Clinton, Parliament in Funkadelic.
That night. Sir knows.
An original.
Yes.
An original. Mm-hmm. Mary Jane.
Yes. And when she spoke about
hold on
to live and die in L.A.
Hold on.
When I tell you the spirit that popped out of my girl
over here, this one right here, girl. Let me tell you something. Let me be exact. Val Young came to Rochester, New York. I forgot what year it was. But we started going to concerts more frequently because as a youngster, we didn't have those experiences.
Right.
And as lovers of music, once we got older, the way Toya and I bonded was going to concerts. So Val Young is performing. You know, they got the Mary Jane girl. She's the original.
Mary Jane girl.
All right. And so... there was a season of my life, shout out to Tupac, where I just listened to nothing but Tupac. Mm-hmm. I was very depressed. I was always going through it, but his music uplifted me and brought to light like a lot of the challenges that I felt like I was experiencing and seeing around me.
Yeah.
And To Live and Die in LA is not my favorite song of Pac, but To Live and Die in LA is that song. Where every day we trying to fatten our pockets, so niggas hustle for the cash, so it's hard to knock it. Everybody got their own thing, currency chasing worldwide through the hard times, worrying faces. Shed tears as we bury niggas close to heart. What was a friend, now a ghost in the dark. Cold-blooded, huh? Nigga got smoked by a fiend, trying to floss on a blind to a broken man's dreams. Mm. Okay? Now let me tell you.
Okay.
Me bargain ain't an option now, so I'm stressing. Hold on. Making money off of curse words, writing again. Learn how to think ahead, so I fight with my pain. Late night, down sunset. What? To live and die in LA. Oh, Val, fuck that song up, okay? So when she came to Rochester, this day, this very day, was day two of the event.
Yes.
Day one of the event, we got general. It was Neo Soul.
Yes.
We got general admission, and we was in the crowd. Normally, we do VIP all the time. This time, we would try to be cost effective. The energy that happened that day, it was just given so, like, terrible. It was an elder we were sitting in front of. She didn't want us to stand up. She felt like we was doing too much. I can't see, oh, and who that? Like, talking shit about the artist and talking shit about us being in front of her. I say, yo, you cramping my vibe. I don't even deal with being at concerts like this with your bad fucking energy. So we're going to have to figure this shit the fuck out. And the next day, we was in VIP. They was talking mad shit. We could see the same shit. No, baby, it's a different experiences. Different experiences. Because people in VIP ain't worried about who the fuck stepping over them, da-da-da-da-da. They enjoying the show.
Exactly.
So we got our asses down there.
So, you know, day two, this was when funk, you know, the funk music was
coming. The funk music was out.
It was out.
Break me off a piece of that funk. Yes. Okay? And Val, the Mary Jane Girls, was performing. Part of her set, she was like, who know Tupac? I already knew where she was going with this. She started singing, to live and die in LA, you know, I'm in fucking VIP screaming that shit to the top of my lungs. Everybody else calm with it. It was the Holy Ghost spirit took over me. The Tupac spirit took over me. Now, I always make a little kiki laughing, but I'm really not playing.
No, I get in my
zone. Yes, I had a zone.
I can't.
And when I said, Val, acknowledge me, she acknowledged me. She knew.
That I knew
that she was on that motherfucking song. Singing the way she was singing. It was a full circle moment. So, it be shit like that that I love and like. And how did we get here again? What were we talking about?
We were just talking about just the love of hip-hop music.
The love of, yes, because I understand it. I overstand it. But I also think that, and I must say this because there's an article that's about to be released. Mm-hmm. But hip-hop is a mirror into our community. The Black community, we must never forget that. And so everything that is going right or going wrong within our community will be reflected in a genre that we created.
Yes.
From misogynoir to gun violence, mm-hmm. okay, to anti-Blackness that exists,
yes,
to issues between Black women and Black men,
yes,
okay, to family relationships, to politics.
Basically what you're saying is we are the narrators when it comes to the traumas that exist within our communities.
We are the narrators and sometimes the creators.
Yes.
And as a community that comes from what we come from, mm-hmm. it's to be expected, but it doesn't have to be accepted.
Right.
So there are challenges that are required. You know, people be like, I fucking hate that music. It's a terrible genre. No, you're just anti-Black. You are. I could hold hip-hop accountable. And I could also love the goodness of it. Because the shit that I really like, you probably don't even fucking know who the fuck I'm fucking with.
At all.
You know?
The song that keeps coming in my head right now is Pops, Keep Your Head Up.
Yeah.
You know? It's just... Bruh.
One time, I was in a Uber, and this white man had all the nigga shit blasting with Tupac. I said, yo, can you turn that down? I'm on the phone. Because you ain't about to be blasting nigga. This shit sound good to you. Pac did an interview about that, you know. Some people would listen to him and be like, oh, it sounds good. But other people will be listening to it and will be actually living those experiences.
And that's the person that I'm trying to reach.
So yes.
Through my music.
Yes.
He said, I can't help what someone else's perception of that music, of my music would be for them.
Yeah. Yeah.
But when I say I live a thug life and it's hopeless, he said, I'm trying to reach that child that
feels fucking hopeless.
Feels like, you know.
Like it's a lot that people don't understand. But to bring it back to the Grammys, I had so many thoughts. Mm-hmm. Other people had thoughts too. It was a full circle moment. But I was like, let us never forget the anti-blackness that exists within the Grammys, within how they look at the most profitable genre, with how they look at the artists who create the music. Mm-hmm. The differences in, you know, the experiences that people have within the industry. There's a lot mm-hmm. that is wrong. But people had a lot to say on socials about it. And so I want to uplift some messaging that I saw on the socials. And you let me know what you think. I'm also going to pull... I ain't even gonna tell you. I'm gonna just pull it. So Questlove had an entire thread on social about different questions that people pose regarding the hip hop performance. So the thread was called "General Questions Answered About Last Night." Some are asking if we are playing erasure games. So, yeah, I don't play that. So, in answering the questions of why wasn't Da Da there, one, already booked, two, decline our offer straight up, or a third option I'm not going to get into, or made a decision to wait for the 2-hour August taping. Or we made a decision to wait for the 2-hour August taping. We decided to excuse those who passed the... I'm not saying that right. E-S-C-H-E-W.
E-S-C-H-E-W. Achoo? Is that...
Let me go to...
Is that issue?
Anytime a word don't look right to me, let me tell you, I go to Google and say, I don't care how educated I am. It's some words that I struggle with.
Yeah,
and I ain't afraid of motherfucking admit it.
Go ahead. We can do a learning.
We're going to do a little learning today.
A little learning right now what that means.
Okay.
Is it issue?
I think so. It's deliberately avoid of saying. Hold on. She ain't talking to me.
It's chill.
Hold on. Learn to pronounce.
It's chill.
Okay. So we decided to eschew. It is what it is. More speech. Okay. Those who passed away and give flowers to the living. For starters, I learned with VH1 Honors, not all rappers are good MCs, and bad karaoke is a danger slope. And way too many legends passed away. So someone's estate was going to be heated regardless because so many people wanted to be included, right?
Gotcha.
This went through a crazy evolution. All my suggestions were 20-minute presentations with breakbeats, graph legends, dancers, DJs, beatboxers. You'll be shocked how fast 25, 40 seconds goes by and you don't even get the halfway mark of 1995.
Ooh.
Remember, 1973 to 2023 was the goal. History. We were aware of playing our biases out. If it were me alone, I'd have just skewered to my teen years, right? Mm-hmm. Which is Questlove is aged. You know, he's an elder for real. Mm-hmm. But he right, you know, like if that was his bias, he would have just did, you know, the early greats.
Yeah.
At one point I said we should do all women. That idea didn't get too far. We didn't have time to do some kind of monster kumbaya thing to make that a reality. And this is not leading to a tired narrative that women don't get along because there were more concerns on the men's side of things too. Happiest moment seeing LL and Ice-T just chilling. But yeah, the most asked question was, who all gonna be there? Mm-hmm. Which is understandable. Mm-hmm. We had a criteria we wanted to follow. Alive, harmonizing, turntablism, fighting shape, NYC, LA, Bay, ATL, Nolens, Houston, Midwest, born before 1960, born after 1995, super lyrical, stylistic, original, generally known by at least two generations. Now, granted, they might not be your favorite, and there were two crucial 11th hour, more like 10 minutes before taping cancellations, that might have made it look like we were biased in our choices. But just understand, we literally tried to squeeze everyone in. Some of the questions people posed after Questlove's thread was, why was there no representation of talent from the 2010s? Questlove said because they said no or they walked out with the gift of sipping tea. I think when they talking about the 2010s, they talking about some specific folks. We know who reigned in the 2010s and beyond. So that's quite interesting. Let me go back to the thread because it kicked out. Someone said, I'm sure there were all types of circumstances, but Ice-T as the only LA representative in Staples Center in Los Angeles is wild. Great performance otherwise. Questlove replied, well, I act like 10 legends. So sometimes you got to go with the one who wants you. Mm-hmm. Again,
that makes sense.
Might not be your preference, right. But most of hip hop has side gigs. Acting was the main issue. Lots of movies being shot.
That makes sense.
Someone else said this. Thanks. I remember a while back someone said, was it you that certain rappers, I remember a while back someone said, was it you that certain rappers didn't do tributes / receive them because it could age them? Is that like some 2010 rappers felt having younger artists perform after them was the same, while artists before them like Nelly are in the nostalgic class? Quest said, this is key. Started 20 years back with hip hop honors. Hip hoppers, current at least, loathe sentimental history or talk of legacy or anything. So half the no was from the we ain't old school. Once 40, then motherfuckers. Once 40, then mofos think about making a lasting impression. So he was just like, once people reach the age of 40, they think about making a lasting impression. And that's actually factual, right? The people who are hot today are not the same folks who were hot 10, 15 years ago, mm-hmm. You know? And the people who were hot 10, 15 years ago, some of them are very much so cemented as greats. Some of them weren't included. Some of them may feel like, okay, no, we don't want to be considered old school, but 2010s? Let me tell you something.
Go ahead and tell it.
The whole Cash Money. I don't even play no games. High school.
That was even before, I think. A little bit before, right?
And now I'm talking about 2010's Cash Money era.
Okay.
Very specific.
Okay.
Young Moolah, baby. I'm talking about Young Money.
Okay.
Family I love, don't want to leave this world alone. So before I leave home, I'm talking about that era.
You brought back a memory. Yes.
All right.
Yes.
All right. Good. Yes. Good. Yes. Good. 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 Moving it along. I'm not surprised to see Nelly because Nelly was a very important part of
Midwest
hip hop culture, mm-hmm. 2000s on. Mm-hmm. Honestly, he don't really got to do shit because this man been rich for a long time. He'll do gigs.
He was really one that I knew from the St. Louis area. I didn't know anybody else from the St. Louis area. Mm-hmm. That put St. Louis on the map.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
When he first came out.
Now, some elder person who knows older history of hip-hop might come in here and be like, well, you motherfuckers didn't know this person. But it's a learning experience.
It's a learning. Just come on now.
Now, I'm going to have to be real. Andre 3000 don't come out to shit.
No, he don't.
Okay.
When I saw Big Boy, I said, where is Andre? But I knew.
Uh-huh.
We know Andre.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we that's okay.
But I'm telling you, them right there.
That nigga come up from The Rock and give you 16 bars. Like, what the fuck was he thinking with the bars?
Yo, the thing about it.
It shit sick because it shit be so sick.
The thing, this nigga is a musician.
Yes.
Not a rapper, but a musician.
Yes.
Okay. He fine as hell too, God yes. bless him.
Yeah. Yes.
And I say that respectfully.
Respectfully speaking.
Respectfully.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
The thing about Andre is I remember him doing an interview or he said something like he don't even feel like when he creates shit that is something.
What?
I said, I can be your daughter. I can be your daughter. Don't play with me.
Bruh.
You better get out there and you teach these people. You know what to do. What? Uh-oh.
Bruh.
The way this man thinks about music.
I hope that you're the one.
Yes.
What?
The way this man thinks about music, it ain't a fucking game.
You are the prototype.
Had a whole fucking cartoon.
What?
Bitches just all up in the greenery in the video. Are you kidding me? Bumper, I'm gonna sing a song for you. This nigga had a class of 3000.
Yes, I remember. Yes,
I don't play games when it comes to Andre. Andre walked so that Anderson .Paak could motherfucking run. Whew. I need people to be able to piece together the pieces. Okay,
bruh.
Like, it ain't a game out here.
No, it's not.
All right. So, Questlove said that. Hold on. Someone asked, they said, what was the picture on your drum kit? Couldn't make it out on the broadcast. The very first hip-hop flyer. Symbolism. And that's another motherfucking thing. Let me tell y'all something. I took a class in undergrad called Religion and Hip Hop by Margarita Guillory. At the time, she was my professor. She became my soror. Okay? That class changed my life. That class became one of the most popular classes because the way Professor Guillory taught understanding hip-hop, mm-hmm. the history of hip-hop, the messaging of hip-hop, I said, oh my God, I'm sitting here in this class, I said, this shit is me. This shit is you and me, sis. I'm over here sitting like, damn.
You're in awe.
In awe. I still got my notes from that class. Any other class can kick rocks. But that Religion and Hip-Hop class, I think about it. I think about that being the first time I heard about braggadocio rap. I'm in class sitting, listening to Jay-Z and shit. I'm in class listening to Lupe. I'm in class listening to Kanye. I've been working this grave shift and I ain't made shit. What? And then before she dropped that shit, she dropped the original fucking sample of the Negro Spiritual that motherfucker had on the track. I said, my God, that when I say it changed my life, it changed my life. I started talking about hip hop completely different.
Yeah, because
I had to turn.
Because for me, I always, what pulls me in anyway will be the beat.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So when I listen to a beat, I'm like, oh, I know this beat. Like, for instance, with Nelly's first album,
mm-hmm.
I got that damn album so many times because I had a tape.
Yeah, that tape would be. I used to love to take your tape, retape it, and then tape shit
over. The damn tape done popped. I had to get another tape. Then I got clever and got the CD. And I had a CD player.
Mm-hmm.
But neither here nor there.
Mm-hmm.
But the last song on the album was Loving Me. And it's interesting because I can't think of the artist right now. I'm drawing the blank. But it was sampled. And I said, I be damn. Nelly, you clever nigga. And I was like, yo. Like, I appreciate how he made it his own, of course. But yeah, just knowing the sample of the music and where mm-hmm. it came from.
Mm-hmm.
Just the respect of that. Even with, like you said, with Pete Rock and CL Smooth, Troy, in the original, and then how
Oh, bruh. Let me explain this to y'all. Another concert story. Toya didn't participate in this concert with me, but I had went with my graduate assistant, my GA, of the Douglas Leadership House at the time, Gabs. We were bonding because she was about to go off into her doctoral program. And they had a weird setup. They had Pete Rock and CL Smooth.
But they had a lot of R&B artists.
They had SWV.
Mm-hmm. TLC.
TLC. Somebody else that was there that day. It was just weird. And so there were some old heads there, but I knew the ones who were there for Pete Rock and CL Smooth. They looking at me assuming that I'm there to hear, where did you go? Yeah, I'm there for there. Yeah, I'm there for that.
But I know what you were really there for.
I was really there to hear they reminisce over you, Troy. And the significance of that story is VH1 used to play, I always say that that's the song that made me fall in love with hip-hop. Because I always loved music. Mm-hmm. But VH1 used to run these specials where they used to talk about hip-hop and run down the line. And I used to be like, yeah, I fuck with hip-hop. But do I really fuck with hip-hop? Now, that song made me be like, you fuck with hip-hop.
Yeah.
So, I don't know what it is. I'm like, doing something in the house. And all I hear is, I reminisce. And I'm like, what the fuck is, what am I hearing? Mm-hmm. I ain't never heard this song in my life. Mm-hmm. So from then on, that song became my ringtone for about 6 years. I only done had 2 ringtones mm-hmm. in the past 12 years. Mm-hmm. And it's They Reminisce Over You. And it's That's the Way I Feel About You. Bobby Womack, Troy by Pete Rock and CL Smooth. So they come up. And because these niggas are hip-hop icons. Mm-hmm.
Go ahead and dig into it.
Pete is on a motherfucking machine.
What'd he hit you with?
Tom Scott Today. So I usually am expecting niggas to just drop their track. Real niggas who are hip-hop greats don't ever drop their track. If that shit is sampling something, you're going to get the original.
And then
you're going to get their shit.
Then it's going to transition to what they produce from that.
And I'm going
to
tell you who do shit like that. Nas do that shit. I'm already standing up because I know what song about to drop. You got to know the motherfucking sample. Know your history. Niggas hate me at concerts. And I love that shit. I know what song they like, damn, this motherfucker know every fucking song, yeah, don't she? Yeah.
Like, what the fuck? Like, how y'all know this shit? Because, nigga, we know.
Because we know. So, all I hear is, today I feel like loving you. Da, 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 da. Today, da, da, da. You hear the horns coming in that motherfucker. So the elders is like, there's like 5 old men around me, okay? One, get up out his seat. I'm already out my motherfucking seat. Get like me. You know what I'm saying? They're looking at me crazy. I was like, it was like, I had the Holy Ghost spirit again. The spirit took over me. I'm rapping the shit all wrong. Then it's not dun 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 dun. This nigga spending, he's spending like a minute on the fucking sample. I'm over here, I'm gearing up for
the drop. Right.
Dun dun dun.
You feel it.
Yeah.
The anticipation of it all. You got so excited. You couldn't, I'm so excited.
Oh, what? I couldn't fucking hide it. I got the recording. I got the recording on Dropbox, but I ain't even gonna play it. I'm gonna try to insert a little clip or something like that. But all you hear is dun dun. When I get to the bridge, I reminisce. Oh, fucking CL coming. Smooth as butter. I'm over here. The way I'm screaming right now is how I'm screaming. I remember this for us. Back 22 years ago to keep it off track. That's how I'm screaming. The birth of a child on the 8th of October. A toast when my granddaddy came sober. What? Fucking up the lyrics. I hope the little black boy grows. 18 younger than my mama. But he really got bitches with the girl. I'm over here in single parenthood. There I stood. By the time she was 21, had another one. This was the girl. Let's save a pair. Same father as the first, but you don't give a damn. Irresponsible, plain not thinking. Papa said chill, but the brother keep. What? On your slide. Why the baby got slide?
The mama got.
Wives to the game. The youngest five kids, girl, here it is. After 10 years without no spouse, mama's getting married at the house. Listen, positive over negative for a woman to master, mother queen rising.
Deja vu.
Tell me what I'm gonna do. When they reminisce over you, my God. That song was named after a friend, Trouble T. Roy, who was a dancer.
From Heavy D.
Heavy D. And the boys. Mm-hmm. He passed away an untimely death. Mm-hmm. They dedicated that song to him.
Never be another.
He was my brother. Trouble T. Roy. Mm. P. Rock and CL Smooth for 92. Whew. And we out.
Can we just stop? That shit is just like.
Later.
This is the shit that. This is why. When we go to concerts, it's never us really sitting in our seat for long. Because
ever. I like to have a seat there, but I like to
because
stand.
We are literally standing, dancing, even in intermission when they're playing like different music. Like
they have us recorded dancing at Rochester concerts.
I really do. And somebody asked me, Latoura,
was that you? Absolutely. You won't see that side unless you come to a concert with
exactly.
me.
Exactly. I'm having fun.
Unique. All right, let's. I fucked up them lyrics bad, but
it's okay. You were so passionate. You were so excited. You said you cried too because you were like,
I did cry.
I can't believe they actually played the original.
I cried
before they even got into their transition.
It was such an emotional moment. It was like the tears. I shed tears for that song.
I shed tears for Scarface.
Tears for Scarface Smile. And then I shed tears for Pretty. TLC performed Pretty. Mm. And that was a song growing up that always hit me differently because I did feel unpretty.
Same.
You know? And so I'm like bawling because, whoo, it just gives me chills now just thinking about it. Because I'm like, yo, like, I used to look up to them, look up to these women. We sharing the same air right now. Mm-hmm. You understand what I'm saying? We sharing the same air. They ain't missed a fucking step. They got a space blocked off. You know where Lisa's space would be. Like, it's just like, it was a lot. Mm-hmm. But it was.
A lot of emotion, but like a good feeling because music.
Make you lose control.
There you go.
Let me share what The Dream wrote in his tweet and how some folks responded. So The Dream said, 100 people say we love what artist Z has done. Those same say we love artist Z album over everything. They super consume the album. They come to the concerts because she's amazing. But when it's award time, they get on the phone and gather. And oh, I do mean gather. True. It's unlike any other musical platform. It's based on purely the taste of a fellow musician's KW fellow people we work beside and see. It's like you showed up late and you wondered who told the boss you came in 2 minutes late. The person you work beside told. So it's all G. Oh, okay. Maybe this tweet was not a part of a thread. I thought it was. Excuse me. But it's the first tweet that's interesting to me. And someone ended up posting underneath him. It's very telling that they consistently disrespect real artistry. This is a skillfully executed popularity contest. I'm so sorry you all didn't get the respect you deserved for Album of the Year. It's absolutely telling how they use black talent and backhanded at the same time. Someone said move. Someone said it's clear that it's not about quality anymore, but has it ever really been I think they was gonna let her win, but she came late and they changed their mind. You know they be petty.
Nah.
Which is ridiculous. I don't think they had intentions to give it to her in the first place.
No.
Someone said, this is why it's important to get the real ones in powerful positions. Solange once said it best. Excuse me. Build your own. Be the goal you want to hold. You know, and it makes me think about, like, how folks show up in other spaces, even when it's with our own, right? Black spaces and Black award ceremonies don't hold the same merit as the Grammys.
That is true.
You get a BET award, folks, it's like, you got a BET award, but this is supposed to be Black exceptionalism, right? For being Black, right?
So why would this be beneath it? What the Grammys do?
I'm not gonna lie to you, though. BET... 03, 04, 05, 06, I'm gonna buy you a drink. Ooh, wee, ooh.
But even though they not said, that we keep saying,
it's ooh, wee, ooh.
That's how we sing it.
Period. That nigga could be on stage and he performed that shit. Oh, hold on. I saw T-Pain the concert. I just click, click, click. T-Pain was in concert at RIT for one of their winter festivals. So, we pulled up. I went to the U of R, by the way. And this motherfucker can sing. This was way before he did NPR's Tiny Desk. Mm-hmm. I said, this motherfucker can sing. It's a down south boy. I don't expect nothing less.
Tanahashi.
But when he performed it, shot it snapping. Ooh wee ooh. Straight all the time. I love you. I do. But it's ooh wee ooh.
That's how we sing it.
All the time. Every time. But it's a fact though, you know, and people love the Grammys. And I get it. It is a very star-studded night. Shout out to Viola Davis.
EGOT
status, baby. Mm-hmm. That's what the fuck I'm talking about. Beautiful. Mm-hmm. But truth be told, like, people don't get what it is that they deserve. So I want to pivot to other tweets that folks said about Beyonce. And you okay with that? You cool with that?
I'm okay with that. Let's go ahead.
Someone made a post that said, Renaissance succeeded as both a dance classic and iconic piece of music history. Beyoncé's lack of recognition on Album of the Year proves that the Grammys still lack a fundamental understanding of the artists that push her forward. Rolling Stone. Another person said, I think part of the frustration is that Renaissance is not The Departed or Al Pacino in Scent of a Woman. Beyonce was clearly due for an Album of the Year win, but Renaissance is vital, an exquisite project, not a late career makeup call. Hope she wins someday, but this was deserving. Someone said, denying Beyonce Album of the Year. During Black History Month, the Grammys never see in heaven. I fucking hate that show.
Bro, who said that, yo? I can't. Yeah, I never seen it happen.
Rolling Stone. Somebody at Rolling Stone. Let me tell y'all about Rolling Stone. Somebody at Rolling Stone drafted this fucking essay about 2 months before the Grammys actually happened and said, if it does publish, I'm using these paragraphs. And if it don't, I'm calling their asses out.
Oh, shoot. They had it already prepped.
No, I feel like that's what it gave.
Oh,
okay. Because these motherfuckers came out swinging. They said Pop Tings ended up posting it. Rolling Stone on Beyonce's loss. 2023 was supposed to be the year that she finally got her dues and snatched up album of the year. Queen Bey has somehow never been given the accolade, despite a decorated career spanning more than 25 years of hits and culture-shaping music. Album of the year is not just about the album of the year.
No, it's a significance to that.
It's like the album of the millennium.
Yeah.
And she has had so many albums that have deserved that.
But yet, every time you turn around, it's always her getting snubbed.
Which brings me to the question, do we need white validation in order to know our true worth? Hell the fuck no. I answered my own question, and it was only supposed to be posed to be a conversational piece. But with my fucking militant black ass, No. Another post said, Renaissance not winning album of the year is another example of how black women can consistently deliver excellence, reinvent the wheel, shake the culture, and still not be recognized to the extent how a black woman, okay, still not be recognized to the extent that she deserves. I hope Beyonce realizes that her music is more important than a Grammy. If they never fucking show up for the next 10, 5, 11, 15 motherfucking Grammy Awards, then so be it.
That's her, and so be it.
Ooh, come on, Preston, with the word. There is something infuriatingly racist about the vast majority of Beyonce's Grammys being in R&B categories while having 4 nominations for Album of the Year and winning 0 times. 0. Meanwhile, artists like Taylor Swift has 3 under her belt. Good night. New York Post. Fuck them, because they be saying mad racist shit. Anywho, how could Beyonce still not have an album of the year after 4 noms when she already should have at least 2? Renaissance was a true album, a complete statement from start to finish with the smoothest of track transitions taking you on a journey. I think I want to say this right now. The conversation surrounding Beyonce in her being snubbed again is so important. Not only because of the work that she has done as a black woman, when we overexceed and we still are undervalued, but because of this, there are very few artists who make the world wake up. You know, every now and then people be like, aight. You know what I'm saying? You don't really. Her 4th year in a row? Not in a row, but you get what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. To deal with that so much and having everyone talking about it, how she was deserving of that, how she was snubbed again, that shit speaks to a deeper conversation about blackness, about being an exceptional person, overworking, undervalued.
And then this is where I say this again. It becomes tiresome that we have to constantly keep having the conversation to our worth. And going beyond the exception.
Yeah.
Going beyond that.
Mm-hmm.
There should have been no reason why she didn't receive that.
Mm-hmm.
It's justified.
Mm-hmm.
Why didn't she receive it?
Mm-hmm.
And it makes me think just like this. I'm gonna be blunt with it. We're gonna make sure she gets these Grammys within these categories here because she's entitled to those.
Yeah. Never too much. It's like black women can win until they win too much. It's like, let me humble you. It's like, you great, but you not this great. Work harder. It's despicable.
It is very despicable.
Because even though she is a class act.
Oh, yes, she is.
Very even though so. she not saying much, you know? The truth is, the world feels that snub. When she first got snubbed, the world acted like they didn't feel it. Second time she got snubbed, the world acted like she didn't feel it. The third time she got snubbed, the world acted like they didn't feel it. But the fourth fucking time, the world feels it. Every fucking body is talking about this.
And like I said, it sucks because you constantly have to talk about the fact that, why is this? We know why it is.
Our why ain't never too far.
No, it's
we
not.
Just look down and see it.
And yet,
I'm a wordsmith. I just want to put it out there.
For those who don't try to, well, it's not always about it. Yes, it is.
Yes, it is.
Yes, it is.
It will because always be about
it's not that. Only it's not only at the Grammys that we've seen this, but we've also seen it at the Oscars.
Mm-hmm.
We've also seen it when it has come down to
the Emmys.
Yes.
It's the Emmys, the Oscars? No, it's EGOT. Emmys, Grammys, right. Tonys, Oscars.
It's different, right.
I know my shit.
But it's the same dynamic.
It's in real estate.
Yeah.
It's healthcare. In education.
It's in healthcare.
It's in politics.
Yes.
It's in hell. Sex work industry. It's in overworked, undervalued. It's in music. Mm-hmm. It's in any motherfucking industry where a black person exists. Because this is how we have the racial wealth chasm. This is how we have black women having to wait a whole fucking year plus until they are able to make the same wages as their white counterparts. It's how it'll take 200 years for us to be able to catch up to the coins.
And even within those 200 years, that's still not enough
time. It still won't be enough by that time.
Because that gap will still be
large.
Huge.
Huge, Rochester, huge. You know? So it's why the racial wealth chasm is this. It's why the net worth of black people is well below what it should be. It's why even when black doctors, you know, reach having an MD, financially, they're well behind their peers, especially if their peers come from wealthier families. Mm-hmm. Like, we can't talk about net worth without talking about how we as black people help to create other people's net worth. How at one point we were money. And how that infrastructure has persisted to till today.
And what we're not going to keep constantly doing is seeing this erasure, because we're going to keep voicing the fact that it's fucked up.
Yeah, I'm going to always call it out. Well, how we live on this?
Call it what it is.
Call it what it is. And people are, well, she's a billionaire.
Like, as a man, if you don't stand for something, you will fall for any fucking thing. And at the end of the day, she should have got her award.
Yeah.
It was owed to her.
Right now, this is a conversation about making it on less than our worth. We do it while setting trends, spreading black assness. Mm.
Full circle moment.
And ultimately busting our tails to live our best life. And if one of the greatest entertainers
of our time,
of all time, can be overworked and undervalued. What does that say for the non-celebrity black woman that is navigating in her industry at the height of her career, evolving with her accolades? What does that say for her making it on less than she's worth? Baby.
That's a mouthful right there. It comes back full circle.
It's relatable.
It is relatable.
Because we've all been there.
Ooh. There you have it. There you motherfucking have it.
I think we did great for this politicking segment. We can tap into, wait a minute. We done talked about black exceptionism. I'm already just fucking up the word. We done talked about...
we had our speech moment.
Music. You know, we done talked about a lot of things. Let's tap into what we've been watching and tapped into and how we feel. What are some things that you've been tapped into, navigating, reading, watching, listening to, that has made you pause and say, wait a minute, take a motherfucking step, two step, three step, four step.
I didn't get a chance
step,
to.
Six step, seven step, eight step, nine step, 10 step. A 12 step, a 13 step, a 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20.
You a straight ass.
2019, 20, 20, 20,
20. I should shoot 20, something at 22. Your ass. I ain't got no damn pillow over here. 2023,
did I say 2021? Gotta insert that before the 2022 and after the 2020. Don't these motherfuckers get on your nerves when they do too much, never too much, but just enough. But even when we do just enough, we find ourselves in the rut. Come on with it.
Why the fuck? I want it so
Am
bad.
Am I like this or is you like this? Yes. Yes.
How about you go first?
I want to go first. I just want
no,
to.
No,
I just
no,
to,
no. You go
I
first.
I just wanted to tune.
No, go ahead. You go first. Yep. Mm-hmm. You discuss on what made you say, wait a minute, because obviously what you just said right now, have you had to, wait a minute. I ain't got time to do that shit. Go ahead. Do your thing.
You know what? I've been saying I ain't been watching nothing, but I have been watching a little something, something. I've returned back to watching CNBC Make It. There is a guy on there who I'm familiar with his work because he was featured on a realtor channel living in New York City. He lives in a laundromat in a dope-ass, you know, part of the city, living just enough.
Oh, really?
And he's an artist, and yeah, he pays $1,800 a month to rent, and he does like a lot of creative shit, so that was pretty cool. I was tapping into that. I believe his name is Steven. I think his name is actually Steven. What else made me go, wait a minute? Oh, okay. I've been tapped into sermons. I used to watch a lot of sermons way back when. I used to watch a lot of Potter House. And then one time I watched Potter House and I was like, I think I'm not really aligned with some of the things or the narratives that were being shared. Mm-hmm. Not that they were bad, but...
But that's okay. That's why there's multiple churches where you figure out what pulls you in.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. And so it was Alpha Street Baptist Church. And I came across this channel randomly. One of my friends sent me a sermon that broke down sexuality. Mm-hmm. And it was good. And it wasn't rooted in anti-blackness. And it was safe and it was comfortable. And it was just like, wow. Mm-hmm. You know? And it was so timely because it was something that was recorded maybe 4, maybe 5 years ago.
Wow.
Probably like 5, 6 years ago.
Right.
I was like, yes. If I could think of a church that I would want to be at, it would be this.
Gotcha.
Because being an accomplice ain't meant to be easy work. But you know which messages you're supposed to be aligning with.
Mm-hmm.
And I received the messaging. And so the other day, well, it was a few days like this, I just kept coming across sermons that popped up on my phone that were very much relevant to what I was dealing with in my life. Different things that I was feeling that I probably didn't speak out loud, but I was going through it.
Right.
And a sermon would pop up. The interesting thing about it is before my granddad passed, he would be like, you know, you got to get aligned with a church. You got to get aligned with a church. You know, you got to make sure you get a church. You know, I got your Bible. You know, I'm telling you, this man had mountains of Bibles, all different types of Bibles.
Yeah.
Study Bibles, New Testament, Old Testament. Am I saying it right?
Yeah, because some of them were like really separate, like their own Bible. Like New Testament had its own Bible,
mm-hmm.
Old Testament had its own Bible. He had different language with
different Bibles. Languages. I'm like,
wow, like
different size fonts.
Yeah,
like just mountains of Bibles.
Yeah,
and also Black history books.
Yes.
Some of them, which we have here, those are books that they ain't going nowhere.
No.
But
can you speak about the Bible we found? Out of all the Bibles that we went through, there was a box that our granddad had of all of, our accomplishments. Well, hers.
That was her
box.
I'm not going to do this with y'all.
He had her graduation from high school. He had her graduation pamphlet from undergrad. He had her graduation from when she received her master's in Albany. And
a booklet.
It was a booklet. He had one of mine that was from a college I ain't going to speak of. Was going to be in existence. Cheap ass motherfuckers. But anyways,
exploitive ass.
Exactly. There we go. There
y'all
we go.
Just like the Grammys.
There we go. But out of all the Bibles we went through, in this particular box, it had a Bible in it with her name on it.
Her name.
And I was like, wow. Out of all the Bibles we went through, we finally found Bible with your name on it. Granddad had this box specially for you.
Everyone had this running joke that I was granddad's fave. That's not true. Okay? That's not true. That's not true.
I didn't say that, but
he was just supportive of you was his buddy. He was just very supportive. That just very supportive of me in ways that I ain't even understand.
Mm-hmm.
But as we are cleaning through our granddad's apartment, my cousins are just sick of it. They're just like, yo, like, how much shit does he have of you? Because this is just ridiculous. And in the back of my head, as I'm cleaning the kitchen, I was like, I wonder where granddad put all of the kids' stuff. You know?
He just showed you.
And yep. In that box here started, me, here go, this right here with you.
Look right here.
So I moved to granddad's room because we were cleaning up his stuff. And,
we were finding things we maybe we shouldn't have found,
and that is what it is. He older than me. It is what it is. But my cousin, like, you want a Bible? Here, your name's on it. And I was just like, what? He was like, yeah, it was by where all your stuff was at in this box. And my granddad, I really felt, was speaking to me in different moments of our grieving process.
Yeah.
From us cleaning the place where he last was, to touching the things that he last touched, yeah. To the things that we needed to help move his process along. There were different signs. And I can honestly say that everything that my grandfather wanted us to have, we have.
Yeah.
The family history, the books, the Bibles.
Yeah.
We got what we need to piece it together. It's hard to talk about it like that, but it's the truth. I say this to go back to the point, that I believe that my grandfather miraculously shot something to me that I could help navigate, you know, through tough times. And I've been on Alpha Street Baptist Church sermons ever since.
Yeah.
It's very timely, very on time. And I think that I will continue to go to those sermons late at night. Monday. And work. I know Goliath's story.
Goliath.
I know the story.
I know what you were talking about, though. Mm-hmm. I knew what you meant.
Know about David, too. Paul, too.
That's the story, David and the Goliath.
Holding grudges and shit. Never work with each other again. Someone died. It's Paul near his death, right? You know, relationships ruined. I said, oh, all of this is just very...
It's a lot of stuff in the Bible.
It is very on point to this life.
Yes.
The Bible ain't nothing but life.
Yo, your hand. If you can see us, yo. Right. I can't.
That's
how
my hand went up. I got my woman.
Oh, Lord. I feel...
Oh, that motherfucker put his hand up. Feels so good to me. I think about grandma with that arthritis all the time. With that one left hand. And that thumb cocked up to the side. That rheumatoid. I need a, you know, you want to talk about somebody praising? I need me a rheumatoid hand.
Get out.
That's what I need.
Can you get
grandma?
Go, bro.
We should get to, wait a minute, for you.
I'm done. That's what I said. You know what I'm saying? I'm gonna say wait a minute because you said grandma's hand. I'm gonna say wait a minute. Go on somewhere, yo. That's wait a minute. All right, y'all. We up out of here. I can't take no more. This is wait a minute moment.
That's you. Till next time.